This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
I'm your host, Louise Taffer, and I'm with Josh Parrish tonight. Welcome to the show. It's great to have your company here on this Friday evening as we wrap up the week that was and look ahead to all of the A-League action to come. And there's a bit of news floating around at the moment, but before we get there, I'd just love to remind you that you can become an FNR shareholder today, Josh.
Yes, you can become part of what we're doing here at FNR, trying to grow Australian football and go globally as well. It's a revolutionary platform that we've got here. First football exclusive media outlet that there's really ever been in this country. So our crowdfunding and shareholder offer ends on Monday, the 18th of March. Head on over to birchall.com and search for FNR Football Nation Radio so you can become one of us.
Even better, I have the actual website. So it's www.birchall.com/company/FNR. And as Josh said, head over there if you are interested. We'd love all the support that we can get.
And always consider the offer document and general CSF risk warning before investing.
Now, taking a look at some of the news headlines, Josh, as I mentioned, there's a little bit floating around and it is game day in the A-League. What better way to start the round than with Adelaide United, who are hosting Perth Glory tonight?
Yeah, huge fixture this one, and always an interesting clash between these two teams. Tends to be a close one. Perth Glory, obviously the high flyers this season, but the drama surrounding Adelaide United and Marco Kurz, his spat with the owners, which we covered in some depth yesterday, continues to bubble beneath the surface, and I think there's a bit of tension there. Marco Kurz wanting his future clarified, and the owners really dawdling on the prospect of a new contract. There's been different stories flying around as to whether the owners had promised discussions after a certain date. Marco Kurz has come out publicly and said the owner didn't respond to his messages for 3 weeks, and then Adelaide United releasing an official statement refuting the claims of their own coach. So all is not well in Adelaide, and I think the fans probably starting to get restless at the fact that Kurz could be out the door sooner rather than later.
Well, it seems that way. It seems there's a little bit of uncertainty at the club. You touch on some of the things that we also spoke about yesterday, the fact that Marco Kurz had requested a meeting with Adelaide United's chairman and he hadn't responded in more than 20 days. And Adelaide United did come out yesterday and clear the air, saying that due to all the reports that had serviced, basically the chairman said that he would meet with Marco Kurz when he returned from his international trip, which was this week.
I think there's more to it than just a simple miscommunication. I'm not sure that Adelaide are completely satisfied. The new ownership, that's not the fans, are completely satisfied with Kurz's performance and him as a manager of the club going forward.
But why is that? I mean, Adelaide United haven't done terribly bad this season. I mean, they're sitting fifth on the A-League table. That's well and truly inside the top six at the moment. There's not too many games to go. And, you know, they've won 8. They've drawn 7. They've only lost 6 games so far. I thought that they've been, you know, quite good this season.
Yeah, only one win in their last 5 games. They are fifth, chugging along okay. They seem to have stalled a little bit recently, although they did get the win last week.
You're right, they have stalled because Marco Kurz's men have only picked up 2 points from their last 4 matches.
Mm. And it's been a dry spell for them. I'm not sure if the results would be judged the same if it was a domestic coach in charge. Say it was somebody like a Ross Aloisi, for example, someone who's been rumoured to be in the running for the job in the past, a former player at the club. How would these performances be judged? Because I have a little theory that we have a bit of an inferiority complex in Australian football when it comes to both foreign players and foreign managers. And it's not as if, you know, the Kurz style is particularly easy on the eyes, not building towards something like, you know, Gombau and Guillermo Amor were with their style of play that took quite a while to bed in. It's pretty straightforward. It's all based on defensive discipline, hard work and transition football. And I'm not sure if, you know, an Australian coach would be under even more media scrutiny than Marco Kersey is, just because he comes from that background of German football that, you know, we all sort of admire and respect.
Well, potentially.
And I think the same thing maybe goes for Marcus Babbel at Western Sydney. He's very good with the media, a little bit less gruff than Kersey is.
Well, Babbel has changed his approach in the latter stages of this season.
Mm.
I think that earlier in the season, we didn't see any improvement over the rounds, and he just continued to lose week in, week out. But he has added in a plethora of young players, and unfortunately, a few of them, three, are actually off on Oli Roux's duty. But we have seen in the latter stages of the competition that he's brought in a mixture of younger talent to add to the quality, and it's reaped rewards to an extent.
Yeah, I think we've seen more of development in Marcus Babbel's strategy than Kurz's over the course of the season. As you say, Kurz has pretty much stayed the course, and I'm not sure if they'll be found out. I think the owners probably are expecting a lot, even though they're not putting in a great deal of investment. It doesn't seem like the ownership change has really changed the fact that Adelaide United operate on, you know, a pretty mediocre operating budget. They did sign a striker in the January transfer window who hasn't really done anything of note. Yordi Thomason hasn't solved their goal scoring woes up front. And, you know, they've only scored 27 goals in 21 games this season, a goal difference of plus one. It's not that impressive. A lot of their results are ground out by the odd goal.
Well, that's exactly right. How accountable are the players for this? It can't all just be on the coach, because the players are effectively playing the game, right?
Yeah, so of course.
You look at Craig Goodwin. He's been a little bit quiet over the past couple of rounds as well.
I think we expected a little bit too much from him, considering the start to the season that he had. He was absolutely electric. Obviously, that FFA Cup final, he just won basically off his own back. And he scored a number of spectacular goals in the first few rounds of the season. But I think that sort of regressed to the mean. He was in a purple patch. And, you know, over the course of the campaign, you've seen, you know, what we can regularly expect from Craig Goodwin, who's had a really heavy playing load, nearly plays 90 minutes every week. And, you know, I think he looks a little bit exhausted, considering he's playing in this sort of high-pressing, intense, very fast style that Kurz favours. The injuries have hurt them a lot, and Ben Halloran being out, I think it hurts them even more than, you know, maybe people take into consideration, because not only does he score goals, even though he's not the out-and-out striker that, you know, they've been crying out for, he does play an important role in that system. And when Adelaide had their best result of the season, which was that win at home against Melbourne Victory, he completely played them off the park and nullified, you know, what Victory were doing, just a perfect game plan. Halloran was key to that, because he was playing in that number nine role as a more versatile player, more mobile, and was able to cut off passing lanes and really start that defence from the front and generate chances that way. And so I think his absence has really hurt them in the past couple of months.
And even, you know, with the likes of George Blackwood, he was injured early on in the season for a number of weeks, and we didn't see him. And now he's only just come back into the fold.
Yeah, and George Blackwood, I quite like him as a player. I think he's a good prospect, although, you know, maybe he's not as young as people think, considering he's still in those Oli Roux camps, even though he's one of the more experienced players amongst them. I'm not sure where Adelaide United really go from here, what their strategy is moving forward. Maybe they're looking to install a local coach, maybe a South Australian, or maybe this Dutch consortium is thinking about implementing a style of football that, you know, is more congruous with their football background, which is, you know, very much a polar opposite to Kurz's style. And you see a lot of times when there's an ownership change, the new owners want to bring in their own man, essentially somebody who really lines up with their beliefs. But because they're so secretive, and we've only got this one public face who doesn't say much, Piet van der Poel, it's a little bit difficult to discern what their intentions are. And I think that's probably frustrating Kurz, who wants to, you know, secure his future.
Of course. He wants to know where he's going, what he's doing, and also build a squad for the future, because, as we touched on, there are more than six players coming off contract in June.
And I think Adelaide have really played reasonably well against a lot of the top teams, but maybe struggle to get results when they have to take the initiative. I think they need to build on what they're doing in possession, because that's been a weakness of Kurz's teams over the past two seasons. You look at the last game, that loss to Sydney FC, and they really didn't have much with the ball. I think they're lacking in central midfield with the injuries that they've got. Isaias had to drop into the back line that game because of the absence of a number of central defenders. And they had to play a back three of Scott Galloway, Isaias, and Michael Moroney, which is not ideal. Two fullbacks and a central midfielder. So having so many injuries, I think, has really, really cursed them this season. And also, I don't think their foreign signings have really nailed it as they did last season. Ken Ilso has been fits and starts. He had that suspension. Kerr doesn't seem to trust him enough to start him in games. Mirko Bolland has been good when he's played, but he had that long-standing hip injury. It's just been a campaign that's been really fraught with those injury setbacks, and the recruitment hasn't been as consistent as maybe in previous seasons for the Reds. So I don't think they'll really go anywhere in the finals. I think they're looking at another first-round exit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they'll be playing, if they finish fifth, they'll be playing Wellington Phoenix. I would back the Phoenix in that game, especially if the Knicks are playing at home. Obviously, the table is incredibly tight at the moment. Adelaide could play Melbourne Victory, and we have seen them put in good performances against Victory
this season. Well, they actually held them out.
Yeah.
And they defeated them in that home game.
I think it was 3-0. That was a brilliant performance, but I think it's been a little bit downhill from there.
And I can tell you that Jakobsen and Mile Jusnic returned from injury tonight, so they could be two players who might make a difference.
Absolutely. Well, if you are a Reds fan, let us know. 9944 9999 03 if you're over in South Australia or anywhere outside of Victoria. 0428 933 45 is our text line, or you can comment below on the Facebook Live or even tweet to us at FNR_radio. And David Svetkovsky has come through saying, "Terrible shirt, Josh. The Preston Lions one looks much better on you," which I have to agree with. Great night last night at the Preston Lions season launch. And the Lions Den kicking on, and they're starting their season, not this weekend, but the next in State League One. So exciting things happening over at Preston. And thanks very much to Docasa for having us last night.
Very exciting for them to kick their season off and get things underway. But just going back to this game tonight, Josh, Adelaide United hosting Perth Glory. Kickoff is at 7:50pm Australian Eastern Daylight Time. We've touched on Adelaide United, but now time to look at the Glory, because they're unbeaten in 12 and they've created a nice 6-point buffer for themselves. Mm. How do you think that they'll go into this game? We also know that Alex Grant and Marcella return for the Glory. And it's an interesting one, because, again, Adelaide United are quite defensively sound. Mm. So is that enough to keep Glory's attack out?
I would maybe tip a draw in this game, or if not, maybe a narrow Perth Glory victory. They always have good games between the two of these clubs, in the sense that they're high quality and tight contests. So there was 1-0 draw that didn't really, really raise much above the midfield battle that it entailed. But I do like watching these two coaches come up against each other, because I think they're very good reactive operators, able to analyse the opposition and try and nullify their attacks and so forth. So it's always an interesting contest. I think Perth Glory having those injured players come back into the fold really helps them. They haven't really had that first choice backline for some weeks. And, even though Tony Popovich has a reputation as a very sound defensive coach, they've actually conceded quite a few goals. So great to see Marcella and particularly Alex Grant back, who I think is hugely underrated as a player. I think Adelaide United will make it difficult for them. I tipped a draw last night. I'm starting to reconsider. I think it might be a 2-1 Perth victory.
I'm going Perth as well. And when you mean they've conceded a lot of goals, they've conceded the least amount in the whole competition.
Yeah, but there've been games here and there where they've shipped goals. There was that 4-3 against Western Sydney a couple of months back.
Wasn't that incredible? Conceded
2 against Melbourne City and had to fight their way out of a hole. So, they do have a good defensive record overall, but I do think they're, not as defensively sound as some of Popovich's past Wanderers teams, who, almost impossible to score against.
And compared to last season, do you know how many goals Perth Glory conceded in 2017-18?
I mean, the Kenny Lowe era was, they didn't really defend. I don't know if they practiced defending. It was just a crazy open style of football, which was always entertaining, but very frustrating for the supporters. Go on.
Can you guess?
Last season, I'm going to say 42 goals.
50.
Wow. Okay.
Perth Glory last season conceded 50 goals in the A-League.
That's crazy.
And finished eighth. This season, they're currently first and have only conceded 20 goals. That's incredible. What an improvement.
Insane. And I think the inconsistent form of Sydney and Victory have really let them off the hook in a few weeks where they've dropped points. But they have been the outstanding team in the league this season. And that level of improvement, even though the squad is almost completely changed, is a testament to the work of Popovich and the whole football department at Perth Glory, who've put together such a fantastic squad in a short space of time. So credit to them. But, you know, I do think it would help them to get back into winning ways after a couple of weeks of draws.
Well, that's exactly right, because we touch on the fact that they do have that six-point buffer. Sydney FC are trailing just behind them, and Sydney FC take on Melbourne City this weekend.
Mm. I think Sydney will probably get that done, but just because I haven't been hugely impressed by Melbourne City, and City will have lost a couple of players to Ollie Roos' duty, who I think are amongst those who give them a little bit of spark.
Well, Warren Joyce is saying that despite him losing some of the players to Ollie Roos' duty, he's going to go even younger and look to target some of the youth products that we know City have stacks of.
Yeah, that's great. And I think he has to because there's been so many rumours swirling around that a number of those players will be leaving the club at the end of the season if they don't get game time.
And the strongest one that's come out again last night, and we spoke about it on the show yesterday, is Dylan Piraeus. He's been heavily linked with Western United, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I have no doubt that that'll go through, to be honest.
I think so too. I think he's a ready-made A-League defender. But the problem is that right-back position is so stocked at City with Nathaniel Atkinson and Richie Delatt both ahead of him in the pecking order. So, I mean, when I've seen him play NPL too, he just looks like he's very much an accomplished player. A lot of them, you can tell the ability is there, but they're not quite polished. He's ready to make the jump up to senior football. I think he's overdue for a chance. So a move would suit him well. And Western United having to fill out their squad, you know, I think he'd be a great acquisition for them. I think Iannucci is also one who's been targeted by Western United, who's, you know, a little bit more of a rough diamond, who needs a little bit more development before he can, you know, be starting games week in, week out. But Price, next season I could see him starting for like a bottom half team at right back week in, week out in a pinch.
Yeah, I still think that Iannucci needs a lot more development before he does earn an A-League start and is a, you know, fully fledged A-League player week in, week out.
But he's much younger.
He is much younger. He's only 17. Mm. So he's actually one of the players that Warren Joyce is looking to potentially call on over these next couple of weeks now that some of the other players are off on international duty. So very exciting. Again, it'll be interesting to see how Melbourne City go this weekend. You know, they've had some mixed results. We've seen Jamie McLaren, though, some positive news. He's scored week in, week out since he's been here.
Yeah, he's started like a house on fire, scored more than a goal a game. But unfortunately for Melbourne City, it hasn't really led to decent results. They've been drawing and losing fixtures that he got on the score sheet in. So for McLaren, I don't think you can ask much more of him, but the team has to lift around him and be able to supplement those goals with, you know, goals from midfield and sturdier defensive performances, because their rest defence in recent weeks has been shambolic. They just haven't been able to defend against counterattacks, which is something that you'd assume a Warren Joyce side could do. Sydney FC, on the other hand, are very defensively sound, and that's why I think they're going to win this match despite the Champions League hangover and the travel, because I just think they've defensively looked really good, even away to, you know, Japanese champions. Maybe no one will score in this game. I think of all the games this weekend, it's most likely to end scoreless. But I think Sydney might just get it done 1-0.
And there seems to be a little bit of there's something going on in the Sydney FC team at the moment, given the rumours circulating around Josh Brillante.
Mm. And it's an interesting situation. I think he's probably earned the right to look for an overseas move. It's interesting that they've left him out of the squad during this time, and also been so open and upfront in public that
they tweeted interest. It at the time.
Usually clubs try to keep this stuff under wraps, but, you know, I don't mind Sydney FC being totally open and not trying to hide anything from their supporters. He's an important cog in those that title-winning team, the team that won the Premier's Plate last season. But I think they have the players in the squad to be able to cover for him for the rest of the campaign if he is to move over to Korea, which is the strongest rumour at present. They've got Paolo Retre, they've got Anthony Caceres, so they've got cover in central midfield. And they've also got players who can come into those attacking midfield roles as well, like Luka Ivanovic, who I've been hugely impressed with and I think deserves more first-team opportunities since he's come onto the scene. So Sydney will be fine without him, although they'll be so sad to see him go. I'm surprised that Brandon O'Neill hasn't attracted more interest. He signed a new contract in January, I believe, and there was a lot of talk that he would go over to the Championship in England and try and represent the Republic of Ireland internationally, being in closer proximity, making it an easier commute. But it seems as if he's committed his long-term future to Sydney, which surprises me because out of the two, this season at least, Brandon O'Neill has been in the in-form player. I think Brillante's maybe dipped a little bit since last season, not quite at his best, but O'Neill has lifted to another level both defensively and with his play on the ball. So I'd be surprised if he's not attracting at least some interest from overseas despite being under that contract extension.
Maybe that's the Corica effect.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think he's just coming into the peak of his powers now as a footballer. I'm not sure if it's to do with coaching or just his individual timeline and development, but I've been hugely impressed with him. And I wonder whether, you know, his form will attract some interest from his former coach at the Socceroos now, considering there's been a little bit of a, you know, international speculation as to who he will play for, if he will make an international appearance. Republic of Ireland obviously looking for, you know, the diaspora, the players who've grown up in England and other countries abroad to represent in the national team. They've lost Declan Rice to England, so that's another holding midfield player that they won't be able to call upon. So I'm wondering, you know, maybe Brandon O'Neill would be good enough to make a few Socceroos caps.
Yeah, I think for sure. But again, when you look at the position he's in,
that's the problem.
It's stacked. How many midfielders do we have?
We have a lot of midfield players.
We have a lot of quality ones too. Aaron Moy's yet to return.
Yeah, it's the most competitive position on the park. You know, Master Luongo, Mark Milligan hasn't retired yet, although there's talk that he might soon.
Tom Rogic.
Yep, Jackson Irvine. All those central midfield positions are very difficult to get into, but I don't see why Brandon O'Neill couldn't come in and take, you know, the last squad spot from, say, a Jimmy Jago, who didn't play at all at the Asian Cup.
Yeah, that was a bit odd, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he was the last.
I thought it was an interesting call-up.
Yeah, I would have liked to see Terry Antonis in that spot. I think he's another one vying for that position.
And again, he was in better form at the time.
I don't know. I don't watch a lot of the Austrian league, to be honest. But Jimmy Jago's team has been doing reasonably well. I think it's Linz, or I might be mixing him up with James Holland, but he's not really a player who's going to make an impact off the bench. He's more of a, you know, starting player who's going to recycle possession and be a solid option, whereas someone like Antonis or even O'Neill, who's got good ability off set pieces and so forth, you know, might come off the bench and make an impact in an international fixture to actually change the game. So that's why I would like to see somebody with a little bit more about them going forward in that last spot. Obviously, Mustafa Armini is a favourite of Graham Arnold's from his Central Coast Mariners days, but he didn't play much at the Asian Cup either. So I think there needs to be a little bit of a rethink of the central midfield in the Socceroos.
And touching on Graham Arnold, there's been some interesting talk surrounding him at the moment. There's been a lot of criticism as well targeted at him because he is obviously not only the Socceroos head coach, but also taken on the role of head coach for the Olyroos. And we know that Marcus Babbel hasn't been too happy, given the fact that he has taken some of his best young players away from him. And he's come out and basically said that if we don't give these young Olyroos an opportunity and the right preparation, it'll be another cycle that we miss out on the Olympics again. Mm. And that's not what he wants, and that's not what I think a lot of people in Australia want. So it's imperative that we do give the Olyroos the right preparation to prepare for these upcoming qualifiers.
And it's a shock when you go into 38-degree heat and huge humidity in Malaysia. They actually lost to a Malaysian Super League mid-table side overnight, I think 2-0. So not the greatest news, but it is just a friendly. It's just preparation and acclimatising to the conditions. So I'm not sure if you can take that as a true reflection of how good this side really is. And I do think that the clubs need to get over the fact they're going to lose these players to youth team duty. Being an international environment, being abroad, they're all good experiences for developing those players. And I just hope that it doesn't come as a disincentive for A-League coaches to include them in their squads, the players of this age group. I know they're going to lose them to international duty, but you know, a lot of them are good enough to be starting week in, week out at A-League level. And I would really be loath to see those opportunities lost just because, you know, they lose them for three or four games.
Well, that's what Marcus Babbel was getting at last night, though, in some of his reports. He was saying, well, we have to think twice about including these young players in our squads now in future because we're going to lose them at some point. And I thought, well,
is that an empty threat, though?
That's a bit silly. That's a bit selfish as well. I mean, look, I understand that club is your priority, but shouldn't the bigger focus also be a priority for you as well? To, you know, it should be a great thing that these young kids are receiving a call up to the youth national team. That's a privilege. That's an honour that doesn't come about every day.
I guess it's a question of priorities. Like Marcus Babbel, he's a foreign coach coming here to win games and try and build Western Sydney up as a club. And, you know, he doesn't necessarily have an investment in the future of Australia's national teams.
Well, realistically, I mean, it's not like they're teetering around the top six. They're 10 points off the top six. So how much does that weigh into the scheme of things now, Josh?
No, I guess it doesn't. But, you know, he's still fighting for his future at the club. I think he'll be back for next season. But
I think he'll be back for next season as well.
They're still in with an outside shot at the finals. He's obviously come under a lot of scrutiny from the fans. It looks as if the board has confidence in him to rebuild the team next season and take them in a new direction at their new stadium, and I think they're right to do that. They can't just keep chopping and changing managers at Western Sydney. It's been, you know, a very much a period of instability, and they need to give a coach a decent opportunity to put his squad in place. And, you know, this new stadium that they're building next season could be a real jumping-off point for them. I think they're going to persist with these young players because they've invested in youth development at Western Sydney. And
they've built a new academy.
Their academy is free as well, which is, I think, one of only two academies in the country.
The other one's Brisbane Roar.
And guess which two NYL teams made the grand final. So that's clearly working. It's clearly a good strategy. And they've got huge reserves of talent, I should say, in the western suburbs of Sydney, where so many great Socceroos have come from. It's just football heartland. So to not take that into account when you're trying to, you know, build Western Sydney as a club would be completely misguided. And I think it's maybe an empty threat from Babbel, you know, wanting to get these players off the hook for Ollie Roo's duty. I don't think the club would let him just completely sideline all the youth prospects.
And it's the same with Kevin Muscat. Mm. He was having a go at Graham Arnold because he took one player, and that was Victory's fullback, Thomas Deng. Mm. But again, Graham Arnold has insisted that, you know, he tried to have a bit of a balance given the needs of clubs in choosing his squad.
Yeah, I mean, he made some comments to News Corp today saying, I'm thankful to the kids and the understanding of the situation, but I feel the best way of giving them the chance to be Olympians was by asking their clubs to let them miss one extra game so we can train for a week in 38 degrees and intense humidity. I felt for Ernie Merrick most of all, losing three starting players at the Jets, but without this preparation, it would be an even harder challenge to make it through. And this is what you've talked about before. Mm. Supporting the youth national teams, it's not just about funding or, you know, the quality of players. It's about giving them preparation time to actually gel as a unit,
which is key. And we've seen that even more recently with the Joeys. The Joeys have qualified for the FIFA Under 17 World Cup, which is later on this year in October. And basically, FFA hadn't scheduled any friendly games for this youth national team. Mm. And what happened? UEFA kindly came out and invited them to an invitational tournament based over in Turkey. And there they got the opportunity to come up against some of the African nations who are participating at the Under 17 FIFA World Cup and see how they go up against them. And it was great preparation for them because they realised that they might be good, but they're not good enough. And there's certainly a lot of room that they need to improve and that they need to focus on heading into the FIFA World Cup.
Qualifying for these youth tournaments used to be a huge part of Australian football culture. I mean, those barren years where the Socceroos were doing poorly, the youth national teams really carried the the flag for Australia internationally, and they were hugely popular as well. I think we need to get back to that, because a number of the great Socceroos that came through in the 90s and early 2000s played in youth national teams together, and then they had an understanding with those players when they came into the senior setup. They were much
But it's not even that. It's, again, it comes back to the exposure.
Yeah.
You look at the kids who were representing the Joeys at the most recent World Cup that we qualified, which was the under-17 one back in 2015. Now, Daniel Arzani was part of that intake. You had Joe Coletti, who was the captain. He's currently at Brisbane Roar. Kai Rolls, Josh Hope, Pierce Waring, many of the names who you would have heard of by now. And given the fact that they came up against some of the biggest countries in the world at that time, Germany, Argentina, and the other one was, I think, Mexico and also Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you're getting that exposure at 17 years old. How much is that going to give you more experience heading into the rest of your footballing career, having had that exposure at such an early age?
And speaking of exposure, it also means you're seen by so many other foreign clubs. So you're more likely to get a move abroad when these teams over in Europe and so forth are actually scouting these tournaments. But Louise, we must change tack for just a moment, because we've got the head coach of Dandenong City Soccer Club on the line, Jelko Kuzman. Welcome back to FNR.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Now, it's great to have you on, and the reason is that it's the Croatian derby tonight, 8:30 kickoff in MPL Victoria. Tell us, what does this fixture mean, given that the two clubs haven't played each other in a competitive game for so long?
Oh, obviously, firstly, the initiative by the FFV to host the multicultural round on the day of the derby is a fantastic effort for the two clubs to meet for the first time at this level in an official fixture is exciting. I think everyone's really pumped to host the games, and really looking forward to it.
And you got your first win last week. Brilliant result, 3-2 against the high-flying Green Gully. How does it feel to get the monkey off your back in the top division?
To be fair, I think it's been coming. The performance against South Melbourne and Pasco Vale gave us a lot of confidence going into Green Gully, firstly. I think a couple of things that we took away from those games to give us confidence. I think literally shot ourselves in the foot in certain moments of the game, but the performance was certainly where it needed to be. So, yeah, we went into Green Gully full of beans, and came away with obviously the desired result. So, really pleased, everyone.
And your opponents tonight, the Melbourne Knights, having a fantastic start to the season, beating the Bentley Greens 2-0 last week, and obviously you've got all the matches streamed now, so an extra scouting tool. What have you made of them so far this season?
Oh, they're a terrific unit. I think Mickey's got them well drilled. He's instilled a lot of belief, and they're fully committed, and obviously the results speak for themselves. Coming up against them tonight, it's not going to be any easy feat, but We're really confident that we can turn our home sort of venue, our results at home around, and put in a really good challenge.
And Zelko, tell us a little bit about the team you've assembled this season.
So we've essentially kept I think it was 11 or 12 players from the previous season, and topped up another 12, gathered players from all over the country. Queensland, South Australia, Tassie, and the like. So, there's about four or five out at the moment. So we're looking forward to their return. But I think once we get everyone available, we'll be cooking with gas, as they say.
And which of those injuries are you waiting on, given that we don't have too much coverage of MPL in the mainstream media? It'd be great to know who you've got in and out for tonight's fixture.
Yeah, so we've had Diogo Ferreira out for the first four rounds, including tonight. He's obviously come from a professional background, played for a number of A-League teams, played overseas as well, so he's due to come back next week. Stipo Andrijašević as well, who's an MPL player through and through. He's a few weeks away as well. And who else? We've got obviously Icky out tonight, but we believe in the squad depth and what we've got, and I think everyone that's in the squad's capable of playing in the first 11. So hopefully it gives you a little bit of an insight.
Yeah, absolutely. And what kind of crowd are you expecting tonight at Frank Holohan Soccer Complex? Obviously a huge, at least significant game, not just on the table, but, you know, culturally for the two teams. So I'm sure it's a hot ticket.
Absolutely. In excess of 1,000, I think. I think the whole Croatian community is getting behind it. And I think everyone's embracing what is Heritage Round. So it should be a really exciting night. Smell the ćevape, smell in the air, and the Croatian music's blaring in the background. So it should be a really good night.
Well, Željko, thank you so much for joining us here on Evenings on FNR, setting the scene for us, and we'll be tuning in at 8:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time for that one. Get down there if you can, listeners. If not, tune in on the NPL Victoria live streams, and best of luck for tonight's game.
A pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Željko Kuzman, the head coach of Dandenong City, joining us for a quick one there to preview their clash tonight with the Melbourne Knights. Very exciting NPL Victoria fixture. The Melbourne Knights absolutely flying this season. Three wins. They actually knocked off Bentley Greens 2-0 last week, which in a hugely significant result for the club. Bentley Greens being probably the most successful Victorian team of the NPL era. And Hamish Watson, the former Wellington Phoenix striker, has come in with a bang, scored plenty of goals. I've already seen the photoshops from Melbourne Knights fans putting his face on Mark Viduka's body. It's they're a very enthusiastic lot, the Knights fans. And make sure you tune in on Monday at 8 p.m. for the wrap-up of that on the Night Train, our exclusive Melbourne Knights club show.
Isn't that exciting? We've got so many club shows at the moment and plenty more still to come. And if you are interested, please get in touch. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love you to be on our platform as well.
Yes, it's an hourly show a week dedicated just to your club. So email us station@footballnationradio.com.au if you're interested in having your own club show on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Very exciting. And something else that's really got me excited this week, and we touched on it yesterday, is the fact that one of our Australians abroad, Alex Chidiac, who's currently playing for Atletico Madrid, the game this weekend, Josh, top of the table clash between Atleti and Barcelona, is a sellout at Wanda Metropolitano. 68,000 tickets have been sold.
Phenomenal.
It's incredible to think that that many tickets have been sold for a top of the table clash.
Yeah, and women's football in Spain is absolutely booming. It's not just in Australia that we're seeing huge growth of the game. And it's good to see that in Spain they're actually taking it seriously, because in a lot of European leagues it's been something of an aside or an afterthought. But finally we're seeing the growth of the game in Germany, France, even England as well. Manchester United finally adding a women's team this season. So globally it's growing. The interest is there in Spain, as you can see. It's, you know, I get sick of the arguments of people saying female players shouldn't be paid as much because, you know, no one watches the games. But if you don't promote the games, no one's going to attend them. And Spain has showed that if you actually promote it properly, then you can get people through the gates and it can be just as marketable, you know, as the men's game. And with the FIFA Women's World Cup on the horizon, it's just great to see that momentum.
Oh, exactly. And you've got a lot of eyes over there in Spain who clearly watch football because it is like the air that they breathe.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of life. It's the way of life, and it's the only thing that some of the people over there really know. But I have read reports that there are hundreds of clubs from all around Spain that have actually chartered buses to this game on the weekend, which is incredible.
That's amazing.
Just to think that you've got so many people coming out to watch that. I mean, if Chidiac comes on as a substitute, which I'm more than sure she will, what a great experience for her heading into the FIFA Women's World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any more Matildas fixtures before they head to the Women's World Cup. I know the players have had to go back to their clubs, a lot of them getting ready to start the NWSL season, but I don't think we'll see them on Australian shores again.
Unfortunately not. So if you didn't get to see them in the Cup of Nations, you won't get to see them before the FIFA Women's World Cup unless you are
going either over and watching friendly games. And
well, that's exactly right. Unless you live in the USA and you're a massive Matildas supporter, which I commend, bravo. But that friendly is coming up on the 5th of April, which is just around the corner. How are we already the 15th of March?
It's going too quick, and I'm sure Ante Milicic probably feels the same way with so much left to prepare before the Women's World Cup. But, you know, they've got some nice strips. It's all coming together, and I think it's going to be a really landmark tournament, not just for the Matildas, but for the whole of women's football. But Louise, we've actually got a little bit of an interview to play here. Ruan Tonjic, the new signing for the Brisbane Roar, will be travelling down here to Melbourne to face the Melbourne Victory. And our man Athos Syrianos caught up with him a little bit earlier to talk about why he chose football when he was a talented athlete in a number of sports and what drew him to the Brisbane Roar. We're going to play a little bit of that now.
And of course, you yourself just moved to the Brisbane Roar this season. What drew you to the club?
Yeah, you know, just looking in the past and, you know, seeing players that have played here, you know, to them. And I think they're just talking about the culture. The culture is great here, and great people and great staff. So that really drew me close, and I think it was a perfect decision because, you know, I've always wanted to represent this club as well, and it was a good time in terms of, you know, trying to help and create more depth in the squad.
And, of course, you're seeing a lot more first-team action at the Roar. Were you disappointed the way things ended at the Wanderers and you weren't able to get as many first-team call-ups as you would have wanted?
I wouldn't say disappointed. I really did enjoy my time over there. I think, you know, I just felt as a player I wanted to, you know, try something different. I did initially, you know, wanted to play. Wanted to go overseas, but I think it wasn't the right time at that moment. You know, having injuries that had occurred at the time, but I think I ended up making the right decision by coming here, and so far I'm enjoying it.
And it's showing on the pitch as well. You are excelling in those Brisbane Roar colours. Is it true, Ruan, that growing up you were quite the Aussie Rules player as well?
Yeah, I played a lot of different sports. It wasn't always my first at school. You know, played AFL with a lot of my mates, and also, you know, playing basketball and also with rugby as well. So I did enjoy playing other sports.
An all-star sportsman. So why football? What drew you to football? Was it a passionate sport that you liked growing up?
Yeah, I've always enjoyed it. It was always number one, but, you know, I always wanted to try something different, but football obviously attracted more. I think, you know, I just kept training and learning off a lot of people, and, you know, I just kept going on, and I think it became a passion after that, and my love grew for the sport.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR. That was FNR's own Athos Syrianos chatting to Brisbane Roar's Ruan Tonjic ahead of their upcoming clash with Melbourne Victory tomorrow evening.
And if you want to hear that full interview, that was just a little taster. You can head on over to FNR's SoundCloud, or it'll be up on the FNR website as well. But Louise, Brisbane Roar, they're really up against it tomorrow night. Where do you think they are in terms of, you know, next season and so forth? The campaign has been a little bit of a disaster. Let's not beat around the bush. They lost 4-1 to the Western Sydney Wanderers last week. They've conceded goals left, right and centre. They've lost their star striker over to Korea. Where are they as a club heading into next season? They don't even have a head coach in place.
They don't. And on top of that, they've also lost their youth head coach who won them that inaugural Foxtel National Youth League title. So, again, you ask where they're at. I think that they're going to have to start to rebuild, realistically. That's what they're going to have to do. For me, I was really surprised to see Adam Taggart leave the club when he did. I thought that they could have built a squad heading into 2019-2020 around him. Mm. That's a logical thought. And yet here we are talking about the fact that he's off overseas and he scored in his debut game for Suwon
Blue Wings. It was a great impact for him to make over there, and we don't see many Australian strikers heading over to Asia and doing well. It's all centre-backs. Usually they go for the big, burly Aussie CBs, which is fair enough considering the success that so many of them have had, notably Sasha Ognjanovski winning Asian Player of the Year. But it's great to see an attacking player go overseas and do well, and I think it's a better environment for him to develop rather than playing at Brisbane Roar in a team that relies solely upon him to get them out of trouble.
And I think there could be more departures on the way. We heard rumours only about a week ago that Brisbane Roar's midfielder and the former Joey's captain, Joe Coletti, is eyeing off a move to Japan because his mother is Japanese, so that would make it obviously a lot easier for him to get into a club. And I think that would be a perfect move for him because we know that he is a classic number six and he is very talented and he hasn't really gotten that much game time this season. So I guess this is the transition that we're seeing. If you're a young player and you have a lot of potential and you're not getting an opportunity here in the A-League, they're just going to go overseas, and that's what we're seeing.
It's a great environment for a young Australian player. Jason Davidson went over there very early in his career, and I think that really helped his progression. Joe Coletti, I mean, if he goes over there, they're going to work him hard. We heard from Pierce Waring this week, who spoke to media for a very interesting piece about how crazy hard they train. He's at Cerezo Osaka, and that's the club that's rumoured to be interested in Coletti. So it will toughen you up as well as develop your technical ability. And I would like to see more Australians going over to Japan. Mitch Langerak is there. Mitchell Duke's just come back and looked a much, I think, smarter player tactically than when he left. When he was playing for the Central Coast Mariners, he had raw ability, but he's developed into, you know, something of not quite the number nine maybe we were looking for, but he's found his groove as a winger, and I think he should probably be starting for the Wanderers each and every week. Scored last week, of course. And, yeah, I think it would be a great move for Coletti to make, although I'm just sort of dismayed at the fact that he's been left out of the Brisbane team so much this season, hasn't got the opportunities that he deserves, because how long are they going to persist with, you know, Alex Lopez and Matt Mackay? Lopez is a good player, been inconsistent. Mackay, I think, is on the verge of probably stepping down to NPL or retiring entirely, and they've been playing Mackay at number 10 in a lot of games. I mean, recently Wenzel Halls has moved into that role, but it just doesn't make any sense to me. I know Stefan Mork was supposed to be that player, but why wouldn't you bring in someone like Coletti and move Lopez to 10 or even play Coletti as a 10 because he's got that creative ability, whereas Mackay, he's been a very consistent player at A-League level. He's the captain and everything, but he's not a creative midfielder.
And I think that, you know, you do have Coletti on your book, so why wouldn't you look to use him in this time where Stefan Mork isn't available?
Yeah, I totally agree. And just talking about visa players and foreign players, it seems as if a real battle is looming over the New Leagues Working Group and the APFCA. We've talked about this a little bit earlier, that they want to expand the foreign player limit up to 7 players.
And they
or
said
more.
Actually unlimited.
Yeah,
go to an unlimited retainer, because basically what happens, I think as you touched on earlier, the MLS is actually the only other league around the world which has, or one of the few top leagues around the world which actually has a limit on visa players.
There are limits on visa players throughout Asia, but they don't have salary caps. So if you look at the salary cap, and Graham Arnold has come out and said, you know, you look at the fourth and fifth players, and due to the operation of the salary cap, those foreign spots, they're usually not really good enough to be occupying a visa spot because you've got that limit on wage spending. So the combination of the two is rare, and the MLS is the only other league really that has the limits on there
salary
are other
cap.
There are other limits on spending like financial fair play and so forth around the world. If you look at other examples throughout Asia, there are some leagues that have unlimited ASEAN players from the Australian and Southeast Asian region, and I think that would be a great initiative for the A-League to introduce extra Asian player.
They don't want to do that. They've already
ASEAN
said no.
But they think there's some inflationary pressure, which is due to Japan and, sorry, not Japan, China and the Middle East. I think that's totally irrelevant. You're not going to be able to sign those players anyway. And most of the players they're spending crazy money on are foreign players in those leagues. So what impact does that have on Australia? Very little. Maybe, you know, a few of the marquees you wouldn't attract because they've got bigger offers elsewhere. I think they need to improve their relationships and scouting in not just the major Asian leagues, but outside of that, there are plenty of quality around and they're just not being creative enough about it. And Graham Arnold has said this will hurt the national teams if you bring in more foreign players to the A-League, and they will come from Europe. They always do, Europe and South America. And I don't think that really develops Australian football much. The big stars obviously come here and provide something. The APFCA said, you know, that according to some survey they did, that, you know, big foreign players in the league, you know, they help the young players in training and so forth, and that somehow leads to their development. And maybe, you know, playing and training with Keisuke Honda or someone like that, you know, is going to improve your game.
It does, but I mean,
not as much as first team football will.
Ultimately, game time is more valuable than what you get paid.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's the precious commodity that's lacking. And the whole point of expansion is not just to revitalise the league with more derbies and so forth and get more TV revenue. It's also to get more slots. We talk about the real plethora of players who are banging on the door and crying out for an opportunity, and they can't get it because it's such a closed environment. It's a closed league. There's only 10 teams, and there's just only so many starting positions and bench positions available. And now the clubs are saying, with expansion, we need more foreign spots to fill the rosters. I think there's something inconsistent between those two arguments.
I think that you've got the argument that they're willing to tell the media to make them happy, but then they've got the real argument as to what they actually want. And unfortunately, young players doesn't really come into it. It doesn't, because, again, you look at these clubs and they want to win silverware, and they believe that if they play a young player, it's taking a risk far too big, when I actually see it the complete opposite. If you take a risk, that risk might pay off.
Mm.
Daniel Arzani got an opportunity. Warren Joyce took a risk. He put him on as a substitute. And what happened after that? He got more minutes and
made a World Cup.
Showed what he's capable of and just had the right ingredients to be on that plane to the FIFA World Cup in Russia. Now, how many other Socceroos and young Socceroos might be out there? How many other players? How many other Daniel Arzanis are waiting in the wings? There's no one out there that can tell me that there's no more players that are like that, because that's not true. Mm. And so you're shutting opportunity down to these young players to give a substandard fourth or fifth visa signing an opportunity.
Well, seventh or eighth if the APFCA have their way, and
which
I totally disagree.
It's ridiculous. It is. It's really ridiculous, and I completely agree with Graham Arnold, because the more that we give foreigners an opportunity, the less our kids are playing.
And there needs to be a balance struck. Obviously, having better players in the league will help, but I think removing salary cap restrictions and getting a better class of foreigner into Australia, whether it's relaxing the salary cap or abolishing it entirely, will have a much more positive impact than just increasing the foreign spots.
Quality, not quantity.
Exactly, because if you still have the same wage restrictions, then it doesn't make a difference. And if you remove those wage restrictions, then you can get quality, not quantity, and actually have, you know, the fourth and fifth visa players, you know, being players who aren't just average Australian A-League standard, and actually add something extra to the league in terms of entertainment and in terms of viewership. That's what they want, and that's what Foxtel want, and they're the ones who bankroll the whole competition.
And then we come back to the discussion. It's like a circle.
It is, isn't it?
We just keep going around and round and round. And it's like a merry-go-round.
I think these debates have been going on in Australian football for decades.
They really have. And then, again, we come to the other discussion that's in this merry-go-round, and that's the fact that just because you get a foreigner in doesn't mean that's immediately going to equate to more viewers and more bums on seats, because it's not the case.
You need the right profile of player who has name recognition or is doing amazing things week in, week out that make highlight reels and generate excitement. And then you need to promote that properly. And that's something I have a gripe with Melbourne Victory. Keisuke Honda and Tyler Ola Toivonen are obviously amazing signings, but have they made the most of them from a commercial perspective?
I would say no. Especially with Honda,
they have no Japanese Twitter presence. They have no Japanese website. They tweet occasionally in, you know, both languages, but they haven't provided the outlet for the Japanese fans. They haven't been able to get a Japanese business on board to sponsor them in the Asian Champions League. Obviously, they had that whole debacle with their sponsor, and now they've got this Chinese electronics company. I don't see them making the most of that investment in Honda, because he's a global superstar and, you know, a figure of worship in Japan, which is a huge football market. They're not engaging that fan base, and I think they're wasting his time here.
I think they certainly could have done a lot more with Honda and ways they could market him to better Melbourne Victory. Mm. And you're right, they haven't done that. And it's a missed opportunity, because what happens if Honda leaves at the end of the season? Which is pretty likely he might.
Yeah, he probably will. He's under contract for one season. Ola Toivonen is rumoured to be on a back-ended contract that makes him a marquee player the season after. And James Troisi is touch and go. I think he's out of contract at the end of the season. If he goes, they might be able to keep Honda. But I don't know if Honda will want to stay beyond one season, because he's got, you know, other things in his life. You know, coaching Cambodia and investing in things with Will Smith. And, you know, he's a mogul, and I think he'll do some pretty interesting and wacky things outside of football, and he almost considered retiring this offseason, so this might be it for him.
Very interesting stuff, but yeah, I completely agree with what Graham Arnold is saying, and I disagree with the extent that the new league's working group is going to with this blueprint.
And they're obviously putting out exactly what they want, and you know that's the start of their bargaining position, and then the compromise will be something in between. But FFA have got a little bit of a dispute on their hands, and bringing in Graham Arnold to try and soften the A-League clubs, I mean, it's a little difficult, because his approach when he was an A-League coach is obviously he's got a different set of incentives, but he famously said the A-League is not a development league. And I'm sure he's regretting those comments now, because, you know, it shows a little bit of hypocrisy when he starts talking to the A-League managers and owners that, you know, don't up these foreign player rules because it's going to trash our national teams.
Well, suddenly he's in a different position and he's seeing through a different perspective.
Yeah.
And realises that youth development is key, actually. And the A-League might not be a development league, but that's just a ridiculous comment.
I think the A-League is a development league.
It is a ridiculous comment.
Well, this is a philosophical question of, you know, why does the A-League exist? Is it just an entertainment and TV ratings generator? I'm not sure that's its only purpose. I think the primary purpose should be strengthening Australian football as a whole. And they keep looking to the MLS example, which in some ways is good. But the US national team has been very unsuccessful while the MLS has been going gangbusters. And they have a lot of foreign players in their league, providing most of that spark that sells it. So it's a question of how can the A-League be sustainable commercially, but also benefit Australian football as a whole. And I think as an A-League fan and someone who wants to see it do well, one of the greatest joys is actually watching up-and-coming Australian talent for the first time, saying, you know, I saw that guy when he played his first game and now he's, you know, scoring goals in the Premier League.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And now you know how I feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like a proud mother hen when I see all these young kids coming through the ranks and now going into the A-League and beyond. And the trend that I'm seeing, the scary trend, is that they're bypassing the A-League altogether because they just don't want to even deal with it. So they'll go straight overseas, which might be a good thing. But
it worked for a lot of the Golden Generation Socceroos. I mean, they had AIS and so forth, other domestic things before they went overseas, which maybe better prepared them for that experience. But we've spoken about before, the A-League as a safety net isn't always the most positive thing.
No.
Just before we go, Louise, I did want to touch a little bit more on the NPL fixtures coming up this weekend. Obviously, we spoke to Jelko Kuzman earlier about Dandenong City versus Melbourne Knights. This is the multicultural round and celebrating the real contribution of so many different nationalities and ethnic groups to the growth of Australian football, which I think is vital to recognise. But the other fixtures this weekend, one that sticks out to me is Altona Magic taking on the Oakley Cannons at Paisley Park. And Altona are a very exciting team who've been promoted. There's big money behind them. They've got a legendary coach in Goran Lozanovski. And I think they could do serious damage this season to the top half of the table, not just survive.
Well, there you go. Thank you for that, Josh. But unfortunately, we've run out of time. And the one fixture I want to tell you to watch is the A-League match tomorrow afternoon, 5:35 p.m. F3 Derby, because Alan Stajic is back in action.
Yes, Alan Stajic, former Matildas coach, making his A-League debut against the Central Coast Mariners arch rivals. The stage is set for that one. I'm not sure he has the quality in the squad to be able to get a result out of it, but it'll be fascinating and all eyes on that fixture.
Very intriguing game. Josh, thank you for your company tonight and thank you for your company at home. If you've missed any of the interviews or the full show, head to FNR's website or FNR's SoundCloud. I'm Louise Taffer with Josh Parrish. Have a great weekend.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.